Well, hey there. Welcome to The Real Podcast, hosted by Jason Kaliba. We think that real people are interesting, not just celebrities and superstars, but also the guy standing in line next to you at the grocery store and the kid beside you in church. We're passionate about sharing the stories and insights of those people, real people, so that you're challenged and maybe even inspired to grow. If you'd like additional resources or more information about our guests, check out our webpage at cochranalliance.com/real. So, let's get real.
Okay, here we go. If you would have asked me when I was 7 years old, who were the menacing figures in my life? Who was I scared of? A couple characters would have come up. For sure, I would have said that I was scared of Dracula. I don't know why. I never read any Dracula books or saw any Dracula movies, but whenever I went into my basement, I was terrified of Dracula. The other person that I certainly would have made my top 10 scary people was Mr. Bell, the principal of Central Elementary School in Drumheller, Alberta. It was the early 80s, and Mr. Bell seemed to me like to be 7 feet tall. He had a classic, it wasn't quite a Lanny McDonald mustache, but it was a great 80s mustache. And all I knew is that I never, ever wanted to end up in Mr. Bell's office. I think I did once, and it was a terrifying day. I think made less terrifying by the fact that the news that I was in Mr. Bell's office never made it home to my parents. And my father, knowing that I was in the principal's office, might have even been more scary for me. But I did grow up eventually. I passed the grades from Central Elementary School. And in university, I learned that principals and administrators are real people, too. And since that time, some of them have even become my friends. And I'm glad to welcome two of my good friends, Tim Carlson and Dave Anger, into the Real Studio today. So, gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Rather than me tell the worldwide Real audience who you are and what you do, maybe if you could just introduce yourselves, certainly your professional roles, but also a bit about who you are as guys and family men. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm probably best known as Leah's husband and Sam and Saul's dad. So have a lovely wife and two amazing kids, grade 7 and 10 this year, which is terrifying in itself. Professionally, I'm a principal at a private school in Calgary that works with kids that struggle with learning, and been there for about 17 years now, and in the principal role for the last four.
Cool. Dave?
I am married to Mary Ann for 28 years. It just seems to have gone by pretty quickly. And I am moving into the world of being a parent to adult children. It just seems to get harder and harder as the years go on. More challenging anyway. But I love it. I am head of school at independent Christian school in Calgary, and I've been there for 5 years. I'm really new to the private school world. My previous career was 24 years in Northern Alberta working in First Nations schools. So I've done kind of a 180 going from the big city, from the bush. It's been really interesting transition in the last few years.
Cool. If we had more time, we could talk about Dave's secret career or profound career as a semi-professional water skier and a ranked slalom skier back in you're still
back in the day.
Both of you guys
back
have more hair than me, and you're all both older than me, so you're looking good. Barely. And Tim is an aspiring fly fisherman. I don't know if he's a ranked fisherman yet, but
in my mind I am. Yeah, pretty good.
Both of you guys are administrating and leading schools really right now. When you first got into teaching, maybe before I go to that question, tell me how you got into education. What was the path like? Did you always grow up wanting to be teachers or principals?
So I had the opportunity. I went and spent year or two, I guess it was a year and a half that blended into two at Bible school in Medicine Hat at Hillcrest Christian College.
Okay.
And we had to do a practicum there. We had to pick something. And I got involved in a ministry in one of the local churches there, working with teenage kids. And so I went into education as kind of a secondary path. I thought this is a great way that I could spend time with kids. And I enjoyed spending time with kids more than I did with adults, actually. And I thought this could be really fun. So I never had a burning passion or desire to be a teacher. And that's what got me in the door.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Tim?
Yeah, I don't think I clued into what teaching really was even until I also went to Bible college, Aldersgate Bible College in Moose Jaw. And I think it was my second year. I was in the Philippines because we were on a music and drama tour. And my music teacher, professor there, said, "Hey, Tim, I think you'd make a great teacher." And so I said, okay. kind of moved on past Aldersgate and went to University of Victoria. Spent a lot of time in Young Life out there as a volunteer leader. And really, like Dave said, really enjoyed working with kids, teenagers mostly. Couldn't handle, I don't think, the little ones at that point. But really kind of grew out of that and took my ed degree in Victoria. And then, made my first teaching gig in Northern BC.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the trajectory of teaching to administrating and leading other teachers. What give us maybe the 1 minute version of your career path from beginning to where you are now.
Well, never thought I would be anything in administration. I think to your beginning points, Jason, it was like you'd have to be a good disciplinarian, you have to be tough, you have to be angry all the time. And that's just not me. Never really saw myself in that kind of a leadership position, but I rose through, you know, department heads, kind of leading teams, taking part in committees, those sorts of things. And then I was telling someone else that today, it was just really walking through open doors. Someone suggested maybe you should apply for this role, this dean role or assistant principal role. So I would say, okay, we'll think about it and talk to my wife about it and really just kind of walk through those doors and things opened up and, you know, apply for different roles throughout within that one school even and made it to this point. So people ask me what's next. I have no idea. It's, again, if there's a door that's open, I usually check it out and walk through it and see where it leads me.
Hmm.
Not in my wildest dreams would I ever told you as a young man that I would be a school leader or a principal one day. I had an amazing opportunity. It's the second school that I worked at, and it was a really, really rough school. And I got to teach junior high in that school with an amazing principal. And he was just unbelievable. And I got to be part of, I think it was the hardest thing that I've ever done, but the most rewarding thing that I've ever been a part of was to be part of the transition of that rough school to becoming just a place that we love to spend our days and hang out with kids. And so when that principal left, he really pushed me into the career path. He said, "You're ready. You have to do this. We've worked together." And I said, "Not a chance." And he came back probably two or three times. And finally, I relented. And I guess I submitted to that opportunity and said, "Well, God, if you want this for me, I'm willing to take it on." And I got the job, and I went into that first year fearful and excited at the same time. But I got in there because of a push from someone who thought I had some potential to do well at the job.
I'm curious, is there, once you make that shift into administration, do teachers recognize that you're really one of them and that you just decided to step into a new opportunity? Or is there like educational discrimination and now you're not one of the bunch, you've gone to the dark side?
Yeah, I faced that actually. So I became principal of a school, a small school. I knew the teachers really well, but I'd been their colleague the whole time, and now I became their principal. And I'll answer your question this way. I was part of a carpool where I rode back and forth to work with teachers for those 6 years. And in October of that first year of being principal, I brought my own car because they needed to vent and have discussions on the way home without the principal involved.
I see.
Yeah, there's always that awkward moment of walking into the staff room and everybody's quiet. And you're like, okay, yeah, I'm just grabbing a coffee. But yeah, there can be that challenge, I think, of when I moved into the dean role in high school, teaching in grade 12, moving to that role, it was a bit of a, okay, now I'm in a leadership role, but I still want to be buddy-buddy, and I don't know how to really make that work. And so it took me a while to get to the point where I felt confident enough to say, you know what, here's the direction we're going in, or have to call someone on something, or even just supporting. It's a different role, and people do have that expectation of you, even though you're trying to think of your old role versus your new one, and how do you make that that jump?
What do you miss about being directly in the classroom?
Oh, I miss the kids. Yeah, I've kept my toes in here and there. Did a little bit of coaching over the last couple of years with basketball, but it's the chance to really impact a kid's life one-on-one with your class that you know so well, and getting to know those parents. And it's a cohort of, in our school, it's 16, you know, in a classroom, and it's tight. And I miss that a little bit. I still try to get to know as many kids as I can, but it's just a different dynamic there as far as kids or students are concerned.
Yeah, I miss the real close bonds that you could make with that small group of kids and kind of walk that road. And some of those bonds have carried on for years. I'm connected with some of those kids still. Social media is a great thing for that. You know, 20, 30 years later, I'm in contact with kids that were in my first classes when I started teaching. At this time of year, leaving summer holidays, one of the things I missed though as a teacher is really being able to check out for the summer. As an administrator, principal, you're in the school, you're dealing with all the issues over the summer, and it's just really hard to check out. So I see the teachers coming back just this week, and I'm kind of jealous that they've been able to check out. I miss that.
One of my favorite young, I probably only know two young MC songs, but Principal's Office. And those words, being sent to the office, strike terror in many elementary children's hearts. And again, I can remember, I don't think I went to the office very much, but one incident in junior high that my parents still don't know about, which I remember going in there with fear and terror. Although I did not rat anybody out, I'm still proud that I didn't rat my fellow classmates out. And so I always know, and we tend to know as people, what it's like to be sitting across from the principal. What's it like to be on the other side of the desk when you're talking, when you are dealing with one of those discipline areas? I don't know if you can tell us any stories, or if you're talking out of school, pardon the pun.
You know, it's every day is a new experience. That's what's great about education is these kids come up with the most interesting things from day to day. One memorable experience. I'm not that guy, Mr. Bell. I'm pretty down to earth, and I think a lot of principals are really. Administration these days really is pushing towards relationship building, instructional leadership. It's less about being the disciplinarian and the heavy hand. I think. I'm sure there's lots of those still out there, but that's a sense I get even with the direction the government's moving in. But my most memorable office experience, a kid got sent down to me. He got sent down a fair bit that year. This was probably 6 or 7 years ago, but awesome kid, such a great personality, but quirky and could push buttons, right? So he joined me a fair bit. And I remember one time I left my office. I left him in there, you know, just sit here and do a little bit of work. I'll be right back. Came back, and he's got Fresh Prince up on Netflix on my TV screen, and I'm like, what are you doing? And I think he was just about to order a pizza, too. But it's like, that's the way I see it, and he and I stayed connected throughout all of the school, and he ended up graduating just recently, and a great kid. That's what I, again, get back to the teaching. That's what I miss about teaching is those connections and such. But sometimes you have to draw the lines a little bit too.
No watching Netflix on your computer.
No, that's not appropriate. No.
As a principal, you know, you do kind of make that connect with some of the kids that might visit your office more frequently than others, and you get to know them a little while and a little bit better. Some of the kids that get sent to your office do things that are absolutely hilarious, and you have to go in there and try and keep a straight face, but you're really thinking, dude, that was a good one. I had a young guy in my office who the health nurse had actually come to the school to do a visit, and he was ready for his immunization. And he, after the immunization, his eyes rolled back in his head, and he fell to the floor having a full-on seizure, which caused the health nurse, who didn't know his sense of humor, to panic and scream. And he just looked up at her and said, "Gotcha." Oh, wow. And I just thought that was fantastic. But, of course, I had to play the role of principal and say, "Maybe you should come and chat with me." I separated them quickly and kept him at a safe distance from the health nurse until she left.
What better
school.
Decision could you have made in that situation, son? Yeah.
Having a disciplinary issue with a student across from you, or having a disciplinary issue with the student's parents across the desk from you, which would you rather have?
I can deal with students all day. Some of the kids, especially in my First Nations background, they've got it tough. And I just have so much empathy and understand why they're lashing out and they have difficulty. And school is not a place where it's an enjoyable experience for kids. They don't necessarily want to be there and enjoy everything you're doing in the day. So I have always had a lot of patience and tolerance for kids that were really struggling. I find it really difficult when you don't get the benefit of the doubt from an adult or even a fellow, colleague or a teacher, parents. Kids are easy to deal with, and I think adults are one of the toughest things to deal with for me in the job.
Yeah, I always think about it as a team approach, right? If you don't have all three players on the same page, and that's student, parent, and teacher, it makes education really challenging. And I believe kids are kids, and there will always be kids. And that's just, you should expect that. But when you can't get on the same page as adults for what's best for this student, then what are we doing here, right? And it's also about trying to hear and listen, and I think both Dave and I do that as well as we possibly can in our jobs. But I would agree, it can be really challenging if you get parents that are not necessarily open to what's going on, or are so defensive of their child that it's pretty tough to make any progress with. That's few and far between, but it certainly does happen.
The Real podcast audience is worldwide, so there are many parents listening right now to or will be listening in the future to this recording. I don't know how many, but talk to parents if you could kind of say, "Hey, I'm tasked with the responsibility of leading this educational environment," and you want parents to pick up on how they can support you, what they should know about what you're doing, or how they can collaborate better. What would you say? What advice would you give to parents?
Yeah, for me, it's we're all in this together. I don't think there's many educators out there that are in it for the paycheck. A few of them might be in it for the summer vacations because they're pretty good. but really, we're all in this together. And I, as the principal, am trying to help resolve maybe an issue that might be going on. So I'm not the bad guy here. It's an opportunity for us to come together and have an open and honest conversation and try and work towards a progress. I'm not perfect. I certainly do make mistakes or drop the ball here and there. But that would be my advice for parents, is a little bit of grace, but also let's try and dig into this together and for the best for your son or daughter. And the best isn't necessarily this grade or this university. It really is character and what are we trying to build these kids into to move into our world.
I'm curious because I remember speaking with another teacher friend about high achieving students, and parents would come in and say, "Look, what do we got to do to get this last remaining 2%?" And he would say, as a teacher, nothing. Like, that isn't the goal. And actually, right now, you could slow down on your kids' own achievement and have them think more about how they can help their fellow students. Is there really much of that big a culture of success? Is that common, or is that far and few between in our Canadian families these days?
It's interesting because we've had the opportunity at our school to welcome several families from other cultures. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's not as much the norm from North American, Caucasian, our privileged kids. Where I see that more is people that may attend our school from other cultures.
Okay.
And they really value education to such a high degree. Mm. It's so important to them to be successful. And I think it's really a key, maybe from where they've come from, if there may not be the advantages, that an education is really a ticket or a key to a better life and opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so the weight on those kids and the families is great. In some ways, it's kind of refreshing because they value the experience and they value a Canadian education so much. I'd like to impart some of that into some of the kids that take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, in the environment I teach in, kids are very motivated to do well. It's really a partnership with the family, as Tim was saying earlier. You have to walk that road with parents. And I think, you know, as to the original question, what would you say to parents that were struggling with an issue at the school? Just really to come in with an open mind and give the staff the benefit of the doubt. Mm. There's not too many meetings I've been to where parents had all the information. And so come in.
Their kids weren't telling them everything?
That may be the case from time to time. So just to come in with an open ear and listen. And then when you're dealing with people's kids, it's their most precious and prized possession mm-hmm. in their life. And so we understand that there's some emotional attachment mm-hmm. to that and there's emotional triggers. So just really trying to be conscious of the emotional triggers that may come up in a meeting, try and stay calm and listen and have a rational conversation, which mm-hmm. is really hard to do when it's your kids are hurting or your kids are having trouble, there's difficulty. Mm.
Yeah, and that's a growth curve as an administrator too, is learning those skills, like those just people, conflict resolution, coaching, like how to be able to kind of listen and rephrase, and here's what I hear you saying. Like those are skills that it takes a little bit of time to learn as an administrator too, but they can be super helpful in those situations.
Mm. You've referenced here matters of race a little bit, and I know, I have the benefit of knowing a little bit of your stories. And both of you have, in your experience, taught in First Nations environments. And so maybe just rather than me telling the little that I know, maybe if you could just fill us in, where did you have opportunity to work with First Nations kids?
Mm-hmm. I'll jump in. My first experience of teaching in BC, there wasn't a whole lot of jobs in BC early 2000s, so I took the first thing that I could find, which was the most remote district, I think, in all of British Columbia, which was Northwest BC. I taught in a school in Dease Lake. Dease Lake is more known the last month because of the murders that happened nearby there. But Dease Lake, a little community of 400 or 500 people, and just off reserve. So there was a reserve very close by that. So the school that I taught at probably was 70% kids from FNMI background and maybe 30% are families from mining community, mining families and that sort of thing. So so I taught there for 4 years and really enjoyed my time. All of us teachers were brand new kind of to the business too. But there's a huge turnover rate in a lot of those communities, which I think is, you know, if we were talking politically, is part of the problem, right, is that retention of teachers and the trust of the community with the education system is one of the big challenges, I think. Yeah. So we got taught for there 4 years and then came down to Calgary after that and really always appreciated and remembered my time up there because I worked with challenging students and still do in some ways, so it helped me a lot.
Mm.
I had an opportunity right after university to go to Peerless Lake, Alberta, which mm-hmm. is about 6 hours north of Edmonton. So I lived in a teacherage. I lived in that community and worked there for 6 years. It was one of the richest, most exciting, valuable times in my life. I got to go on the trap line. I got to net fish. I was just so embraced into that community. Mm. I loved my time there. I'm not sure that I would want to have spent my entire career in that environment, but for the time of in my life, newly married, no kids, it was just a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed my time in that Cree community.
So both of you are working in the Calgary area, and I don't know your constituency, but you certainly, I'd say, middle or upper middle class, a lot of families that are part of your schools. What are the issues, what have you seen that our First Nations kids deal with as they're seeking to go to school that we just, in our environment, are unaware of, or that we just don't think about? What would you say are the things that face them that are different or unique?
I think I can reference back to my last school situation. Just picture being a young First Nations student, and you walk into drugstore, convenience store, and you're the only one that's requested to leave your backpack at the door. People follow you around the store. My students always talk, do the people in town think I'm really that terrible? You know, like, I'm not going to steal from them. I'm not. So just facing the stereotypical things that the Native population faces are they're right there, and they're in your face, and they're kind of hurtful. So the kids, they have to deal with that on a daily basis.
Yeah, certainly our school is a very small percentage would be First Nations or Métis. But we're working with a community north of Saskatoon right now as an outreach piece for us, trying to build some strength into their early elementary program, trying to get kids up to grade level. I think the stats are if kids aren't at grade level by grade three, their chance of graduation is like 15% or something like that. It's huge. It's kind of crazy that way. The challenges, I think, that are out there and why it's been so long and it's still continuing is that there's a difference between my experience with education and First Nation experience with education, and trying to meet in the middle. And I think they call it indigenizing the curriculum right now. How do we meet folks where they're at, so it actually means more to them, as opposed to, you know, the white man coming in and teaching, you know, this is what you need to know about biology. My experience up north, I got a chance to teach an outdoor ed class. We spent a week in the wilderness with me, one other teacher, and five First Nations kids that they blew me away. Like, I would have died out there without them. Like, they it was just so second nature to them. They were teaching me how to put up, you know, tents and such like that. And so it's important for us to always remember that is it can't come from that colonization type of point of view where we're coming in and then we're going to fix everything, because it's never really worked. It really is kind of meeting halfway, and it is that trust piece. And it takes a lot to build trust. And I was up there for 4 years, and I never was, and maybe different from Dave, I was never fully embraced by the community, because they knew I was probably going to leave. I was a single guy, and you know, teachers come up here for 2 or 3 years and they take off, Tim. That's just the way it is. And that's a bit of a reality, because that's where the jobs are, and for the new teachers, and there's a few that stuck around longer term, but it's I think that's a big challenge too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe expanding from First Nations to racism as a whole. So I have my Canadian news site that I visit, and I have my American news site, and it just seems that racism, particularly with African Americans, is just continues to be the defining moments for our American friends. Is racism an issue in our schools today in Canada?
You know, it doesn't appear to be for the five-year-olds, right? It seems to be something that we learn over time. And yeah, you watch the little kids play together. They have no concern around that. I think we have such a homogeneous population in Calgary, especially, you know, West Calgary side of it, for sure, that I think a lot of times it's not getting a chance to understand the other and what that looks like.
Because everybody's the same.
Yeah. So unless we actually get outside of our doors and participate in altruistic activities or go downtown and help an inner city school, I think a lot of those kids pretty do hang out with each other, and And not that they're necessarily racist in nature, but it's me and these people are different from me. So how do I as an educator help bridge that gap? How do I help them understand that we're all human beings here. We're all in the same same plane.
I think that's a little bit of a hard question to answer for any one of us being the white privileged male living in Canada. But I don't see in my school, and we have a very diverse population at the school I work at now. Mm. I think there's issues that come with differences in race. Even people may come from another country to Canada and be new here, and driving rules are different. And we see that in the parking lot, even at the school. There's different rules for how you should interact with each other in the parking lot. Those kind of things can be learned, but I don't see specific racism that's targeted and hurtful and violent. I would like to think there's some of that is alleviated because we come from this faith-based Christian environment at our school.
Yeah.
I think the attitudes of respect towards your fellow students are amazing. I was blown away when I first started working in the Christian school environment to see that. So I think there's issues that come with race and different ways of perceiving the world and personal space and all those kinds of things. But I'm not seeing, particularly in my school environment, racist issues and problems.
Okay. I know you guys because we are part of the same church community, and I know that both of you guys are followers of Jesus, and you serve in different environments. As you've already mentioned, Dave, you're in a faith-based school, but how would you say that your faith and relationship with God is an asset to you? Do you ever feel like being a Christian principle is a handicap, but how does the fact that you're a Christian inform this profession that you've come into?
I think the biggest challenge for me lately has just been the pull of culture on our student body. With kids, sometimes it would seem to be easier to go with the cultural trends, but my faith through all my career has just been the foundation for doing what I do. I can't imagine doing it, anything that I do really, without my, without the hope that I have in the faith that I have in Jesus Christ. And it's where I find my strength and my purpose, because there's a lot of days, a bad day, a tired day, you wonder what the heck am I doing here? And it's your faith that gives you purpose that drives you on. So I wouldn't say there'd be any negative factors at all with carrying my faith, and especially in the environment that I am now, but even before in the public environment. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly being part of a non-faith-based school has been, I would say, there's challenges to it for sure. I think we've got 140 staff members at the school. I know of two, maybe three, that would be professing Christians. There might be others that don't talk about it much for sure, or their faith's a little bit different, but it does feel a little bit lonely at times, I would say. But I think my faith is one of those things that's really helped me to continue and press through those difficult times, and you know, going to God when I have struggles and asking for wisdom in really tough, challenging situations and decisions that I have to make that someone's not going to like for sure. Mm. I think that is that's something that really helps me. My faith is something that pulls me through, that gives me peace in those times when it's like Dave says, pulling your hair out, like, what am I doing? I know God's placed me in this place. And I know he wants me to be a witness for him in a community that doesn't maybe not know much about him. I mean, I think there's a lot more openness to other faiths and other understandings even than there is to Christianity right now, just because of the world we live in, for sure. Yeah.
So when you are laying awake at night worrying about your teachers or your school, or you're praying to God asking for help, what's keeping you up at night?
For me, it's maybe a little bit different from Dave, but I worry about kids for sure. I worry about what they get into. I know that there could be kids on suicide watch that I'm not sure if they're going to show up the next day or not, and that's the kind of thing that just it sits there on you, and it's hard to get rid of, and that may have nothing to do with good or bad parenting. It's just kids are going through tough times in their teenage lives especially, but even earlier these days I'm seeing that happening. So I worry about the population. Certainly do things that keep me up at night are doing my job effectively and trying to lead this organization to continue to grow and to continue to be better and to continue to meet kids' needs and families and be a light for them in challenging situations. But yeah, I would think probably eventually it comes back to the kids for me, because those are the ones that I've lost a couple kids over my time at this school, and it's been
to suicide.
Yeah, or even to accidents and such. Just one even last year, so it's heavy, and you worry about it a lot. And there's a lot of kids that are on the edge at any given point, and you might not even know about it.
I know one of the things I've heard even from listening to the president of a post-secondary institution, and his observation of post-secondary students in a university setting is that the level to which students are dealing with anxiety and stress is unprecedented. In fact, he would say it maybe is the number one issue on campus as far as what students are facing. Mm-hmm. Are you, I don't know if that's directly related to suicide or not, but mm-hmm. what do you see about the level of stress kids have these days?
Well, I would say a lot of those things are, it's more acceptable to be okay, to say, you know, I'm struggling with depression these days than it ever has been. So it certainly is something that is known by people more, and it's seen as a mental illness and a health issue. So I think there's more resources out there as well, which is great. But yeah, there's lots of stressors, and those stressors can be across the board. Yeah, I can't get into the college, or this girl doesn't like me, or my teacher gave me a bad grade, and my parents are going to kill me, or my parents are divorcing, and I don't know how to deal with it. To illnesses and death in the family. Like, the kids are dealing with a lot for sure. And then, of course, you know, technology is another piece of that. It's just so ubiquitous in our society today that need to keep up with Snapchat, you know, the need to keep up with the latest and the greatest, and to show yourself in the most positive light, can have a big impact, I think, on kids and their well-being and how they feel about themselves.
I think one of the things that I struggle with in dealing with stress with students is how much I need to push them to deal with stress and to help them navigate that road, and then to know when it's clinically significant, where you need to put some things in place. The parenting culture right now is to give your child a really easy and pleasant childhood. So I think some of the tendency is for parents to try and clear all obstacles of stress. And I think that's a detriment. So personally, I want to push for kids to overcome some of the things that they're feeling. But you have to be really, really careful, because you would never want to get that wrong. And so just being aware and watching, knowing what's going on with your kids. And then that's a time when I would really love to have a conversation with a parent. Come in and tell me how this is affecting your kids. Is there ways that we could support them to keep doing what they're doing and remove some of the stress, or help them deal with it, other than just removing all obstacles? And that's a temptation, I think, for parents, is to want to remove any obstacle that's in front of their kids, you know, especially as they get in to the older years. And I'd like to echo what Tim said too. The pressure that kids face from social media, they're always on. They have their phones with them. They don't get a break. And in days past, you might be able to go home and check out of school for a little bit, but kids are always wondering who's liking what I'm doing and who is disapproving and who's cool. They're just always so connected, and that adds some stress to their lives that they just don't get a break from. Mm. And I think that builds, it exacerbates the problems that some of them may be feeling.
Mm. For sure. I think there's also another factor you touched on a little bit about failure, right? There's a fear of failure in our society, and I think that could be projected on our kids where, they need to get this grade, and can you let them redo an assignment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which is, there's lots of opportunities for those sorts of things. I'm not saying that, but failure isn't a bad thing. In fact, it's actually really good to have that experience of having to go through something. An old colleague of mine, coined it, fail is frequent attempts in learning. You have to fail in order to really learn and to grow as a person. Mm. And that's why I think kids that struggle with learning are actually probably better off than the ones that it comes really easy to when it gets to university and to life, because they've had to push through some challenging situations. But if we can let our kids be okay with stumbling a little bit, learning from that, supporting them to get back up on their feet, but not try to come to the rescue so they don't ever fall.
Mm. I think we'd both say, too, that there are cases where there's clinically significant stress and depression, and the school and the families really need to be communicating those things. Schools are a great access point to get psychological or medical intervention for kids, and so for parents to be aware that schools should be, are likely... an ally in providing help when you need it. Mm-hmm. We have access to health services and counselors at the school, and just even relationships with other teachers and students that connect with kids can just reveal a whole different side of information. So it's really important to be aware and to be watching for kids that have clinically significant levels of stress that they're trying to manage.
Mm. Okay. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll have to add FAIL, frequent attempts in learning, to one I just taught my kids this week, which was team together, everyone achieves more.
Nice.
So my 10-year-old was shaking her head at that one. So maybe one for those who are in the faith community around you guys, or for parents who are Christians as well. If you were saying, hey, for praying for you guys or for praying for a principal that they know, how would you direct them to pray?
To pray without ceasing. Nonstop. We'll take it.
Yeah.
For me, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but sleep comes difficult for me in the school year. I wake up frequently and have short nights of sleep, and I just don't rest well. I have what I call school brain. Wake up in a meeting or in a family situation, and my mind just races with school at times. So one way that people could pray for me is just for good rest, and to be able to disconnect and have authentic times with my wife and my kids and my family, to be able to just get away from school, because school administration's a pretty all-consuming type of role. Mm. And so that would be, on a real personal level, that would be a way that I could be supported.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're often dealing with you're dealing with the most challenging situations. So the easy situations to deal with around student discipline or whatever it might be, teacher usually manages in the classroom or an assistant principal, but if it's getting to you, it's usually a little more challenging. So when sleep doesn't come easy, or you're not eating well, or you're not getting any exercise, the brain becomes cloudy. I find as I get older, it gets a little more challenging to keep that clear. So that's a great way to pray for principals, wisdom as well, making decisions that are decisions of integrity, that also show who you are as a person, as a principal. It's challenging work, but I think I could use prayer for sure for wisdom in difficult situations and patience, and always wanting to show Christ through me.
Okay. Do you with all this stress that you guys have to deal with, are your wives generally supportive of you being principals, or do they wish you would just go back to the classroom?
I think they think probably we should get paid more. But yeah, my wife's very supportive of my role, but she's also been very supportive of, you know, if we need to make a change, let's make it, because she sees me and my struggles. And usually my struggles is I get quiet and in myself and withdrawn. In my own head. And that's dangerous for me, and I need to get out of that, and I'm working on that. But really, she's been a great support for me and pushes me to be better. And I don't think I'd be where I'm at today without her encouragement and trust in who I am. And yeah, just really driving me to continue to be better. Yeah.
Cool.
I haven't applied for or chased after any of the administrative roles that I've had. They've kind of fallen to me, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I see that a little bit as a calling. I feel very strongly that I'm supposed to be, and my wife does as well. So even when the road gets hard and when it gets difficult and it puts some stress on other areas of life, I have a really high level of support, and that's really important to me. But also, I think this is a season in my life. I'm not sure that I would want to continue in this role for, you know, to the end of my career. I'm open to change. I'm open to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Take it step by step, and I think we seek out what God would have for us together. Mm-hmm. And because there's a sense that we're in it together, certainly have that support. I wouldn't want to do the job I'm doing. Don't know that I could without the support of my wife, mm-hmm. and understanding the demands that it places in lots of different areas. She's my rock. I rely on her greatly for getting through the day sometimes.
Mm. I'm really surprised to hear to say that you haven't sought out these leadership positions, because I certainly became a pastor for the incredible power and control that
totally.
I'm able to have.
How's that working for you?
Yeah, well, we'll see. Guys, thank you for just giving us a little insight into your world, and thank you for serving our kids. None of my kids are directly under your leadership currently, but I know I've actually talked to parents of students who are in both of your school environments, and both have expressed.
It makes me a little bit worried.
Expressed appreciation for your contribution and leadership, and so on their behalf, and I'm sure hundreds of parents, thanks for that. And also thank you for the ways, we didn't really get into it today, both of you guys, and how you've invested in our church and in other churches that you've been at, in addition to what you're doing professionally. Thank you for the sacrifices you make in those ways too, and for being my friends as well. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Real Podcast. For more information on this episode and others, check out our website at cochranalliance.com/real. Until next time, keep it real.